Hello and welcome to the season finale of the KO Knockout podcast. Today we sit down with Allison Davey, managing director at Benefit Street Partners, as she emphasizes how important it is to find firms that truly support women, promote their growth, and focus on their advancement. Join us as we walk through Allison's journey from the beginning, look at lessons learned along the way, and discover what's next. Please enjoy.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the weekly Knockout. We have a special guest here today. A longtime friend, I'm not going to say old, a longtime friend named Allison Davey, who, you know, Allison loves to talk about herself. So this is going to be a really thrilling hour. Isn't that right, Allison?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, Lindsay, I think we should actually interview you. We can talk about the women's group that you formed before the women's event. I bet a lot of people don't know about that.
It's funny. I always think about that when I think of you and how cute we were. What did we call it? The Interesting Women of New York, or?
Yeah. And we each planned, I mean, you planned most of them, but we planned a different outing each week. It was amazing. We did the boat ride. We did art class. We did drinks. It was so fun. I have something similar to that now. It's not as good, but we call it the Dollhouse. So it's a group
that
of.
That's so great. You know what I loved about that, Allison? It was not just finance geeks like us. Exactly. Yeah. You and I think we're the only fine, maybe one other. And then it was really interesting people from across other industries in New York.
And it's so important to have a group of women friends like that. So I'm definitely a big supporter.
So the Dollhouse, is that what you guys call it?
Yeah, we call it the Dollhouse. And there are five of us that get together. We try to do it once a month. We usually do it at each other's homes, and it's amazing. So that is my big tip for surviving life as a working mother, having friends that you can complain to. And so I remember when we did it before any of us had kids, some of us weren't even married, but I've tried to continue that even when you left New York.
I love it. Well, Allison, you and I have had kind of an interesting parallel, but not exactly parallel journey. I mean, we both started at Lehman Brothers early on in our careers. You were, I believe, a year behind me, but I think you were probably the smartest, most talented person in your entire class, from what I can gather. But since we weren't in the same class, there were some things I didn't know about you. I mean, so when I met Allison Davey, you're just this sort of unflappable force in finance. Was there anything that an obstacle along the way before you got to the moment where we connected that can shed some light on the early part of your career?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's funny, the only thing I hate more than talking about myself is having people praise me. I don't respond well to positive feedback, but.
Oh shoot. Cause that's my love language. You're going to be so miserable for the next 25 minutes.
I'm not, luckily people can't see me the whole time. So I'm not uncomfortable. But yeah, you know, it's so interesting. So I grew up in New Jersey, was fully middle class. I ended up going to a boarding school called the Petty School. I actually got a full scholarship to go there. And I went to Georgetown, which is a school that has a lot of international kids, lots of money, and then worked in banking, as you said, where we met at Lehman Brothers. You know, I think surrounded both in high school, at boarding school, in college, and then at Lehman, just surrounded by people who grew up with money. And it was something that, you know, I never wanted to admit that I wasn't one of those people. It was really, really hard for me, honestly. At Georgetown, I remember I worked multiple full-time jobs while I was taking classes just so I could afford to do things that other kids were doing, you know, some of my friends were doing, living in these really expensive apartments, studying abroad in sort of a carefree way. My first summer in New York City, I will never forget my sophomore year of college at Georgetown, I was determined to get to New York no matter what. And I got an internship where they paid me $200 a week, which like you cannot live off of $200 a week. So I had to save a bunch of money doing these other jobs during the school year to sort of make it work until I could ultimately get to my goal, which is to work in banking. But yeah, I think it was so hard for me to admit sort of where I had come from, just being surrounded by people who lived different lives and thinking that their lives were perfect and mine was more challenging. It was really only when I met my husband, who Mike, who also grew up very middle class and was super successful, and realized how comfortable he was in his own skin, that I sort of changed the way I dealt with my past. But it's you know, it's been very therapeutic. Now I actually sit on the board of the boarding school that I went to. So I'm on the board of trustees. It's been a great way for me to get back to a high school that gave me so much. And now I really embrace, you know, where I came from, my family, how hard I worked to get to where I am. I think it's a huge part of what has made me successful to an extent. But it's interesting that it was something that I was not as proud of earlier on.
Well, it just goes to show when we entered the industry, there was still a type. There was a type that you wanted to really fit into. And I hope that that's changing. I believe that's changing.
But
what, quick question. I mean, what was the wackiest or most crazy job that you had during those college years?
I don't know if I can even admit what the craziest job was, but I'll tell you the second craziest. I mean, I did waitressing jobs. I also did internships and stuff. I actually got my summer between freshman and sophomore year, I was trying to save a bunch of money. And I actually got jobs that started at 4 a.m. till like 9 p.m. Like I was basically just working as many hours as I possibly could. The only job that I could get that started at 4 a.m. was a newspaper delivery job. I have to say I only lasted 3 days because for those of you who know me now, I am the worst driver on the planet. I actually haven't driven a car in 15 years. And so I was a terrible newspaper delivery person. You do 2 days of training and the third day I was on my own. And on that third day, I think I only, you have till a certain time to deliver the papers. I think I only got to like 40% of the deliveries. And my mom was like, this job is not for you. Let's move on. So, but that was just, I was trying to make as much money as I possibly could. And I was just waiting until I could get a job in investment banking my junior summer, which I did.
That's amazing. All right. Well, fast forward. I mean, we hung out in our early 20s, sort of early career in New York. So that was a fun time. We worked hard. You ended up in a role in private equity. And I ended up, you know, starting a Women in Private Equity Summit. And I remember when I first started it, I just called like the six women that I knew the best, and you were one of them. And you said, absolutely, Lindsay, like, let's do this. And you were there at the very, very first KO conference, which I'm just eternal. And you've been a huge supporter. You've been on the advisory board. But do you remember anything from that very first conference? I mean, what was that like being on your side of it? I'm just curious.
I mean, it's so interesting. I remember joining. I've been to, I think, almost every conference other than when I had, you know, I have two kids and I think I missed one or two for maternity leave and then, you know, COVID. But I think I've told you this, or if I haven't, I'll tell you now. The most impactful conference that I went to still to this day was the first conference. I don't know if you know the woman who was the keynote speaker at the conference, whose name I have written down somewhere and I'll have to find. But she told this amazing story that has stuck with me to this day. And I actually try to tell people the story as much as I can. I think a lot of people are surprised that I'm a very emotional person. I cry a lot pretty easily. I mean, I can almost cry on demand, but I also get emotional at times that I would prefer not to. And there have been a couple of times at work where I could feel myself getting upset and I either excuse myself or try to hide those tears. And the woman who gave the keynote speak speech at that conference was so powerful. She talked about how she was a crier, which was, I think, the first other senior woman in finance. I mean, I wasn't that senior at the time, but sort of senior woman in finance I had ever heard say that, because most people would say, don't cry, you can't cry. So she said, I'm a crier, and I found a way to embrace crying and sort of, you know, use it to my advantage instead of it forcing me to come off as shy or reserved or, you know, not speaking properly. She basically said, just tell people ahead of time, say, I'm going to start crying, instead of, you know, I tried all these tricks where you rub the area between your thumb and your index finger, or you put your tongue on the roof of your mouth. There's like a million things you can Google that will apparently help you stop crying in the moment. I will tell you, none of them work. But her advice was just tell people, say, I'm going to start crying. Ignore me. I'm not actually upset. It's just me getting emotional. And, you know, let people just let you cry and talk through it. And I have to tell you, I've used it ever since then. There's two big times that come to mind. One is when I asked my boss for the first time for more money. I, you know, warned him ahead of time that I was going to start crying. And I think he was so happy that I wasn't quitting, that he was thrilled to pay me more. And then the second time was when I told the senior people at my firm that I was pregnant with my first child, and I was going to be taking a maternity leave. And again, they were so happy that there wasn't something actually wrong with me causing me to cry, that they were, I think, even more thrilled about the pregnancy.
Have you ever received advice from senior women or just women in the workplace that you thought was really bad, or you've tried and hasn't worked?
Yeah, I mean, so that was the best advice I've heard from anyone. And it was at the KO conference, I would say. I think, you know, in terms of bad advice I've received, you know, I was unfortunately in a job prior to my current job. I think I tell everyone this, it's so important to find firms that truly support women, promote their growth, are focused on their advancement, and, you know, treat them equally to their male counterparts. And the firm that I'm at now, 150% does that. I've been so supported ever since I joined there. I was at a firm prior to my current firm where I was one of only, I think, two or three women. And there was another senior woman at the firm that had a completely different job, role. I was on the investment side. She had a completely different role. She had a very different background, wasn't really relevant to what I was doing in terms of a day-to-day basis. And the firm decided to designate her as my mentor, since, you know, you're a woman, Allison, she's a woman. That means that should be your mentor, which is such an antiquated way of looking at things. Even at Lehman, my mentor was a man. So it was sort of crazy to have that happen. But the advice she gave me, and, you know, she's no longer at this firm, I think she's since retired, but the advice she gave me was so right out of the 1950s. It was, you know, don't speak unless someone talks to you. You know, don't drink more than a glass of wine at any work outing, make sure you dress a certain way and act a certain way. And, you know, it was such unfortunate feedback. It sort of caused me to think I was doing something wrong and question how I acted in every setting. And it's only when I joined Benefit Street Partners that I realized who I am is what makes me so valuable to any organization. And I didn't need to hide that. And I have to say, I do think it's, you know, in some ways not great, but in a lot of ways a great time to be a woman in finance even. I think there's at least a focus at a lot of firms on reducing bias, on improving career longevity. I know we are focused on that, on real mentorship and not just necessarily woman-to-woman mentorship. So I'm, you know, thankful in some ways that I appreciated that, you know, that happened to me. Because it made me stronger. But I really have to say that if anyone's getting feedback like that just doesn't seem right, know that it's not you, it's the person giving it to you.
Allison, for me, probably the most straightforward part of my career was, you know, when I was the doer, when I was just working hard, you give me a project, I crush it. And as I've escalated and taken on leadership roles, I find those infinitely more challenging and infinitely more opportunities to fail at every crossroads. And And, you know, I think I talked to a lot of women who were kind of at that age we were at when I started KO. And when you first came to the conference, we like to call it like the murky middle, you know, the just they've done the doer work, they've worked hard, and they see the path for the senior leadership, but it's really hard to navigate. There aren't that many role models. It's kind of hit or miss what kind of advice you get. I don't know, now that you're sort of the one leading these women, shepherding them, like, what is your leadership style? How are you helping those women in the murky middle? Like, how do you show up for them, maybe in a way that you didn't have when you were coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I think in general, I do think that women are less direct in terms of asking for titles, asking for raises. They feel uncomfortable. And I think women, I don't want to stereotype, but I do think there's this belief, and so many of the women on my team work so hard that if they just work hard, they'll get what they deserve. And I do that. As a manager, I like to promote people before they ask me to promote them. I like to pay them more before they ask me to pay them more. I don't think that's always the case. You don't always have managers. You know, it's funny, at Benefit Street Partners, we didn't even have a true process for promotions until a few years ago, where I said, we need to put in a promotion committee. I run that committee. And, you know, there were people at the firm who hadn't been put up for promotion in 8 years. No one even thought that they cared. And so I think the biggest piece of advice I would give is you have to take control of your career and don't assume that the way you would manage and lead someone is the way that they're going to lead you. A lot of people don't think promotions matter. They think they can just pay people sort of small increases each year and that they'll be happy with that. And so, you know, I tend to lead in a way where I want to really make people that are doing well happy, and I want to pleasantly surprise them. I don't want to just sort of keep them around. So that's I would say the biggest thing for me, but I don't think all managers think that way. I would also say the biggest thing I've been focused on is just with my team, especially for these people in the middle, what career do you want and how do we get you there? What is your career path? Sometimes people are in roles where there's not a clear next step if someone's not leaving. And so for great people, you need to create that next step. And you know, if you can't do that, those great people should leave. And look, sometimes at firms, there may not be a next opportunity for whatever reason. But I like to be very clear about what the next steps are, what my expectations are for someone to get promoted. And like I said, I like to do things earlier and without prompting, which I think is really valued and leads to a lot of loyalty and just a happy group of people.
What's next for you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. You know, I've been at Benefit Street Partners now for 10 years, which is crazy. My 10-year anniversary is on April 2nd. And I have two kids. It's been, you know, a whirlwind, two young kids. My husband also works full time. He actually goes back and forth to Atlanta every week. So it's been kind of a crazy time. I would say I'm so lucky to have such a strong support system. My husband's amazing. I think the firm that I'm at is so amazing. I've been looking to take on just really more leadership roles within Benefit Street Partners. So I mentioned things like running our new, you know, running our promotions committee. I run our new product committee. I'm, you know, starting to oversee other areas of the business from an operational perspective that didn't typically report into me. And also focused a lot on acquisitions and new strategies that we can either build out ourselves or acquire and how that will transform our business. So it's become a really strategic role, which I find so interesting and fun. And you know, in the 10 years I've been here, every year has been a little bit different, which is what I love so much about my job right now.
What has being a new parent taught you? I always say my children are my greatest teachers, particularly one of them. What have they taught you in, you know, the last 3 years? One's three and one's 18 months. So
I mean, I think that maybe I'll have better lessons in a few years. Right now, I feel like we are constantly just trying to stay above water. You know, it's funny. didn't always know that I wanted kids. This was something that I debated for a long time. And my husband's one of 13 kids, so he wanted, you know, a big family. I always was so focused on my career. So we actually didn't have kids until after we'd been married for 7 years. And with both of us working so much, you know, I always thought, okay, we can do anything. Like, I don't believe that you should ever have to choose between your job or your family or yourself or your friends. Like, you know, I still try to see friends at least once a week. My husband and I try to go away at least once a quarter for a few nights, just the two of us. You know, I try to see my kids every night for bedtime, as long as I'm not traveling. So I try to do everything. I thought that, you know, I could outsource things that I didn't need to do. So, you know, what things am I terrible at? Like, I'm the worst cook in the world. So can you find someone to do those things? Can you have extra people to help with the kids during the day or when you're traveling so that you can kind of make this work? I would say we've done all of those things, and having a great support system is great. I have learned that, you know, you can't outsource parenting. You can't outsource sort of the challenges and stresses that come from each individual child's needs. And I believe, and I've learned, that even with a husband who equally shares the burden of sort of the household environment, which is so important, I bear the brunt of sort of the emotional stress. And so, you know, I think my kids are teaching me that I need to let go more of things that I can't control, because you can't control your children and how they necessarily act or what they do or what interests them. But that's been really hard for me, because I am a control freak. And so it's hard as a parent to have things outside of your control.
Good, yeah, well said, well put, very wise. All right, so what's a mantra? We're about to close here. Leave us with a message. You know, what's a mantra that you live by, or something that you say to remind yourself when times are tough?
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting. This is the only question I knew that was coming, and I'm glad you told me, because I struggle so much with mantras. So I thought of a couple things that I did want to say, because I am very type A. I get very easily stressed and overwhelmed, and I try to not show that. And I do try to do everything, which I think is hard. One of the things I do for myself and I live by is I work out every day. It's the most important thing for me mentally to take a break. If I don't work out, I never put my phone down. And so I need to have something like that daily. I almost always do classes. It's super, super important for me to have that. I also like to do some sort of wordplay every day. So I either do the Wordle every day, which is new, but I also, before the Wordle, I would do the New York Times crossword puzzle only on Monday through Wednesday and sometimes Sunday. I'm not smart enough to do Thursday through Saturday. So I would go back to the archives and do Mondays, just because they were sort of a fun way for me to start my day and help me relax. And then I know I sort of just said this in terms of what I've learned from my kids, but I do try to tell myself all the time with work as well, to just focus on things within my control. I can't get upset or worry about things that, you know, are outside of my ability to change them. And so I try to really apply that in work as well, but it's a big challenge for me. I do think it's really hard for people that are type A to actually practice that.
Absolutely. Well, Allison, thank you for doing this. I know I was joking at the beginning, you don't like talking about yourself, but you have an important story to share. And I really appreciate your friendship over the years, and thank you for doing this with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Lindsay. This was wonderful.
Thank you for joining this conversation with Allison Davey, who has learned throughout her career that you can't worry about things that are outside of your ability to change. This and other lessons she has shared today are applicable to us all as we navigate our careers. We thank Allison for sharing her story, and we thank you for joining us on season 4 of The Knockout.